If you point your mic to your mouth.
What?
So after so many years, you would think we were better at this podcasting thing.
We're not.
It's like 20 minutes in.
Yeah. We have a very complicated technical upset. Upset, Jesus. Upset.
Set are you up. Upset?
Deeply, deeply. I can no longer discriminate between, like, a language that I speak and another language that I speak.
Huh.
I don't know, man.
Got one of those Mariana epiphanies.
What now?
Did you know that upset is the inverse of setup? Man.
Mariana epiphany? What?
Like if you smoke weed. And you
right.
get the epiphanies about right. the universe and all.
Oh man, what if, right? What if upset was the opposite of setup? Mind blown.
We as small differences does not endorse or judge about your weed tendencies.
You're sitting next to a pretty big weed.
Yeah.
I think that might have graduated to being a houseplant, actually.
So we are at the office.
Yeah.
At the office lounge.
Yeah. Which is why it took 20 minutes to set up.
Yeah. And you are on a wireless microphone today.
Yeah, we'll see how that works. I feel like I should keep it pointed towards me with the light on so that I know when it's stopped.
That's probably wise.
Yeah. So,
I'm in your town.
Yeah, you're in my town. You're in the big dirty city. Why?
Because clients.
Because clients. Always because clients.
Yeah.
Can you not, like, rub your face on the screen through the internet? And isn't that good enough?
I'm hoping for virtual reality.
Oh, the Me Too possibilities there are just endless. Let's just move on.
Let's move on. yeah, but this me being in your dirty city has grown to be somewhat of a tendency now.
Yeah, yeah.
I almost feel like George Clooney in the movie Up in the Air. I'm not here to fire you, by the way. How's it? Is it up? Damn it. So, I'm surprised that like mindfulness activities hasn't been included in the sprint setup yet.
What would you do about that? What? Explain. Expand. Why would one need such a thing?
Because it's cognitively demanding, because you have to think a lot.
Do you think being in a sprint requires, like, extra focus on mindfulness? Shouldn't it just come out of the process?
Should it? No, because it's very second order thinking bonanza, right?
Title.
There's so much high level thinking going on. I don't know.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's
but like,
where
do you think?
Sprint,
where do you think the extra injection of mindfulness is
because,
needed?
Because mindfulness is. Oh no, we have grown into a mindfulness podcast now.
Obviously.
Nothing good comes after the words mindfulness is.
Yeah, everyone's just turned off. It's just, right, okay, never mind. I'll just listen to the next episode.
But, well.
Where are you going with this?
I guess nowhere. What would be the mindful thing to do? Just in the present?
I've never had trouble staying in the present in a sprint for, like. Because I think there's too much information coming at you or too much activity going on to, like, to be able to drift.
Yeah, because I think perhaps I use mindful wrong.
What did you mean?
I was thinking about detachment, really, or like...
Okay.
Let your mind rest.
That happens during the parts of a sprint with idea generation, I guess. Or just letting stuff do its thing.
I'm not sure.
Tell me what you mean with mindfulness here.
Well, mindfulness... I hate talking about this.
Why did you bring it up?
But because I was thinking about... Because it is a reason it's called a sprint. And it is a mind sprint. And that's pretty exhausting. And if you read a book by someone at Google, I guess, or not... They have an emphasis that you shouldn't have each day be too long, and you should have breaks and refreshments and so on.
It's very structured time.
Yeah.
And this ties into the whole mindfulness thing because...
I think perhaps the mindfulness was a red herring,
okay,
to be honest.
Okay.
But,
yeah, we need more fish in this design sprint, you're right.
Yeah. But...
Is it focus that you mean? Like, what?
Well, it's more of the opposite. Because you are so focused all the time. So you need to be not focused also.
I think that happens in the time when you're not in the sprint. Like, you go home.
Yeah.
And your brain kind of chews on stuff. You had the misfortune to, like, meet me yesterday during the chewing part. Where you asked me what I was doing. And I was like, blah, 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 blah. Which was really just me trying to process. But it happened aloud.
Yeah, but... As you said, a sprint is really structured, so it's almost weird that the after part hasn't been structured yet.
I think the structure is there implicitly, like go away, do something else that is not this sprint for 16 hours, come back tomorrow, and magic will have happened, you will have slept.
Yeah.
Yeah, neuronal connections will have like done something. Oh my God, what if, right, a Google design sprint could affect your brain? Has anyone thought of this?
That your brain actually could change?
Your brain might be changed by Google design sprinting. Like, I'm just waiting to read, almost certainly not, I'm just waiting to read hundreds of articles where people are like, oh my God, but like Google design sprints change your brain.
Well, the fumes from the post-it glue.
We have really inferior post-its, they're not cutting it. I walked past the other sprint room, there's two sprints this week, and the other one has, like, it's autumn on the floor, basically, it just post-its everywhere.
You should check out the non-glue stickies.
Are these the static ones that you have in the office in Bergen? Those are cool.
Yeah, and our colleague Hanna has A-B tested, two different types. One held up for a week, the other one, like, 2 days before they fell down.
Hmm. And which is which?
The
static ones are better?
Well, these were two types of static ones.
Did she test them on different kinds of walls?
Yeah.
That's very important.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wood and concrete and...
glass?
Plaster? Plaster.
Like
is
this?
Plaster? Is it really plaster?
Ish. Yeah.
Because plaster is a thing you like, smear out.
Well, this is probably, like, plaster board. Might have a layer of plaster on top, I don't know.
In Norwegian, we will call this... Gips.
Right. That's plaster, right?
Or gips.
Yeah. Wow. I have whiplash. What is this episode even about?
You had a topic.
I had a... It was a half-assed topic. but let's follow that and see where it goes. Yeah, I sent you a picture. Was that the topic?
You sent me a picture of you out in like a snowy environment.
Yeah, so frozen lake.
and you had ski on your legs.
I had skis on my legs, yeah, on my feet even.
Did you know that Norwegian was born with skis on their legs?
Yeah, Norwegian midwives get paid more than anywhere else in the world. That is a tough gig.
We have the best health system.
Yeah. Yeah, That's why Norwegian women of a certain age walk funny. Yeah.
You went out skiing.
I went out skiing. I haven't like put skis on my feet like maybe once in the last 25 years. I realized. So that was kind of weird. But these are cross country skis. They're like langrenn. They're felleski. They're like I don't know how to describe that. I meant to look it up on my way in actually.
Means that you don't have to slide backwards.
Yeah.
In the uphills.
The technology in these things is amazing, right? They weigh basically nothing. Like, if you've ever lifted a pair of downhill skis, those are kind of robust and heavy and they're rigid, and that's sort of the point. You, like, can catch an edge and do stuff. And these don't weigh anything. Like, nothing. Like, it's like lifting, I don't know, two squash rackets or something. It's like, it's a trivial amount of weight. And you can walk in the boots, unlike slalom ski boots, which are horrible. And they're these kind of long, bendy things, and they have such cool... Right, oh, man. There's like butter and not butter versions, right? This is how I think of them in my head.
Ski butter.
Ski butter, right? Not shea butter, but ski butter. Yeah, like the whole premise with these skis is that, how to describe, like you said, you can't slide backwards. And traditionally what one did for that was, well, first of all, the ski is like a bow, like an archer's bow, in that it can flex. And when you put your weight right in the middle of it, it shouldn't slide backwards. And when your weight is more evenly distributed, like when you're going downhill, it should be able to slide. And I haven't really worked out how the butter version works. It's not really butter, but it's wax, I guess. But it's the same word in Norwegian for butter as for what you do to your skis. Smør, which is like smear.
Yeah.
So I think of it as butter.
Isn't it smearing?
It is. Well, I guess so. But you would say waxing skis in English.
Hmm.
But I really like the idea that it's wax, buttering your skis. I don't know what it is.
It is wax, perhaps. Oh, okay.
Yeah. But it's not like you get one kind of wax and you put it on. Like, there's
many kinds of wax.
There are many, many kinds of wax. You walk into the shop and there's just like this kind of like array of like different wax for different conditions.
You have 50 types of wax for 50 types of snow. Almost not kidding.
Almost not kidding. Yeah. 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 Right to language log right now. Yeah, and it's really complex. Or you can do the cheating version, which I did, which is to buy things that have clever technology in them that remove the need for wax.
Waxless
skis. And this is good because you don't get into the situation that one of my colleagues got into, which is you go out and the conditions going uphill are different than the conditions going downhill, and you have to dick around with the wax endlessly. Like, while you're out, you have to get off the skis, you have to finesse whatever wax business is going on there, and then you have to get back on and then lather, rinse, repeat. Which sounds like, why would anyone do this? Why is everyone not wearing felleski, which is the kind where you've got this kind of clever stuff underneath that's like, was it seal skin that people used to use for this, or reindeer skin, or for skins?
Sure,
some animal like that. They basically just like took the fur off, and it had a nap. I don't even know how to describe nap in Norwegian.
So you went out skiing. There was uphill. You had to kill an animal.
Right.
You have to flay it.
Right.
And then you can touch
Then you have to do something with the fur so it doesn't go brittle, I guess. So you have to like treat it over a long time and then you can put it on your skis. Yeah. Right. It takes a while.
Go up the hill.
Going uphill takes a long time. But they used to use skins that you would strap onto the front and the back of the ski, and then like the fur would stop you. We've got a link to this because it's impossible
to
describe.
Friction.
The friction, yes, thank you. Yeah. The nap of the fur would stop them from sliding backwards. But now there is special science stuff. So cool. It's this tiny little micro fur that looks like it wouldn't do anything, and it stops you from sliding backwards really effectively. It's amazing.
You can also go up the hill fish-boned.
Herringbone, right. Is that what it's called in Norwegian? Fish-boned?
Yeah.
Fiskebein?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Is that the adverb? Would you say fiskebeint? Ja, you would the fiskebeint?
You wouldn't say that, but
what
you could.
What would you... Well, how would you describe it?
I think you... Du må gå fiske... I'm not sure.
You're not even a real Norwegian, are you?
No, I'm not.
Do you have these kinds of ski?
Hmm?
Do you have these kinds of ski?
I have these kinds of ski. No, I have not those kinds of skis.
You have
I actually
butter
have,
kind.
Wax demanding skis.
Okay.
But I had those kinds of skis. These are the waxless skis are usually the skis you begin your ski career with.
That's the downside,
when you
right?
You are 2 years old.
I'm 1.5 in Norwegian. Cut me some slack.
I cut the slack all the time. But, yeah. But I haven't used them yet.
The waxy really. Ones?
Yeah.
Okay.
I bought them on Finn, of course,
of
for
course.
2 years ago. Mm. I haven't used them yet.
You're not Norwegian, are you?
Well, I live on the west coast.
Yeah, not a lot of snow.
Yeah.
Can't you like get on a bus for half an hour or something and like magically be in the snow?
Yeah, I could. Mm. I could do that.
You could do that. Hmm.
So, did you do the I'm exercising on skis kind of trip, or the more I'm hiking outside in the snow and having a hyggelig stund kind of ski trip? Because they're...
That sentence. That's beautiful. Don't change a thing. It was the first time. It was like a I do not know how this is going to go thing. Because it's one thing to stand on slalom skis, but it's like a whole other thing. Like, you know, can I do this? Because the movement is not the same, right?
The movement is not the same. Yeah. And I guess downhill, that's somewhat of a... Perhaps not universal, but that's some... That you do that elsewhere as well. It's not particularly Norwegian.
Right.
But going cross-country out in the Norwegian forest, there you are surrounded by cultural conventions and stuff. Are you aware of this? Perhaps not in Nordmarka, if that's where you...
Yeah, it was, yeah. Like what?
Which side did you go on?
We went to Bogstadsvannet. Which is like near Trevon.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's Nordmarka, I think.
Yeah, and they were prepared tracks.
Yeah. Someone had been out and like groomed this.
Yeah.
To make it sort of cross-countryable.
I would guess that's probably more of an exercise area.
Yeah, like it wasn't a let's go off hiking along a trail somewhere thing. It was like, I've never done this. Let me see if I can kind of get my shit together enough to even propel myself.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you were also passed by middle-aged men in very tight ski dresses or something.
Some of that. Yeah, some of that happened. I overtook some people. It wasn't like, I found it, like, I went 50 yards and then fell down. because, you know, that's what you do, because my skis crossed and like they don't weigh anything, so like controlling them not crossing is hard if you're not actually in the trail.
And why do we fall?
To go ow.
To get up again.
Yeah. Yeah, like I fell over like 3 times, but 2 of those were when I was doing stupid things deliberately to kind of try stuff out. But yeah, like you're in these grooves, like they make grooves or like, and then everyone just reinforces the groove. And these two things, which are like, I don't know, 20 centimeters apart, not much. And you go, and it's like a cross between running and skating.
Yeah.
And I hadn't really thought about that, but it just kind of, you work it out pretty quick. And then you go and it's faster than I thought. It's cool.
Yeah. But there are different techniques.
Yeah.
As anyone who has seen the Winter Olympics perhaps know.
I need to get on YouTube and like get into this, I guess. Like, what is the... Can you recommend as someone who now, well, has previously done this and owns skis, what should I be doing?
Well,
this is great podcast stuff, obviously.
You can actually like have the skating movements.
Yeah.
But not in the sort of the straight tracks, I guess. You would
like herringbone again, right? Like fishbone, yeah. I did a bit of that too. Yeah. And that would be the kind of thing you would do, like if you were just in the middle of the forest somewhere, right, and going up a hill or wanting to go faster.
Yeah. And you can do the thing where you don't use your legs, really. Just sort of the upper body.
How do you do that? Do you propel it with the upper body? What do you...
You use your ski staves.
Double poling, I think it's called, which sounds kind of dubious. Yeah, where you push.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of knee action, perhaps. But
my husband was telling me, someone, maybe his personal trainer or something, had told him, like, that, like, you shouldn't do it, like, if you're getting really tired arms, you're doing it wrong. You're supposed to do it with the upper body. You're supposed to, like, fold the upper body forward and use that to propel
That's
you.
That's good general advice, really.
Okay.
It goes for many types of exercise.
It would explain why I can't lift my arms over my head today. Nah, not really, but... Yeah, I feel that exercise has been done.
I guess you have the, as you said, the combination, sort of combination of walking and pushing. I never had to explain skiing before.
Yeah, it doesn't really... it's very hard to, like, if you just, it's one of those things where the word medium is hopeless for this, like, I need to see someone doing it. I watched a lot of people. And, like, trying to figure out what they were doing.
But were they doing it correctly?
How would I know? I overtook people. Yeah. Does that mean I was doing it more efficiently, or they were just older and tireder than me? Like, I wondered when I was overtaking someone, I was like, yeah, but have they been doing this for, like, 15 kilometers?
Yes, that's the thing, right? in the ski track, you never know.
Yeah. And you could. Like, there is this amazing map just around Oslo of all the ski trails that are prepared.
They are so... much ski trails.
It's like 100 kilometers or something, like all told. It's crazy.
It is.
And like you've
you could spend your whole life in there.
You could. I'm a bit excited by this, actually. We went like 3 kilometers or something on Saturday. And that was like enough for a first day. But you could, if you wanted, you could do this for like 25K in a day if you wanted to just go nuts.
Are you going back?
Hell yeah. It was really fun.
You love snow.
I do. I do. But also, this was really fun. This like fills the gap that cycling like has left while it's icy and cold. And I can't put a pig deck on because like it's a fancy road bike. There's no room.
And it sounds to me that you are going the sort of the exercise route, but. You should also treat yourself with a proper ski hiking trip.
I really want to do that.
Yeah, with cocoa and the quick lunch and the orange and all that.
The extent to which this is like properly part of culture, right? When you look up the map with all the trails on the kind of in the Oslo area, it shows you everything you need, which is namely where the trail is, how recently prepared it is. Like, whether someone has groomed it and, like, you know, recently, or, like, is it needs attention or whatever. Where the parking places are, if you're going to drive there, because it's, like, a little out of the way. Although, like, getting there by public transport is surprisingly easy. That's what we did. What's the other thing? Oh, yeah. Where all the huts are with, like, waffles and hot chocolate. That's the other salient feature of this map.
Waffles and hot chocolate.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do they fleece
Better
you?
Bring something from home.
Okay, bring a flask. Good tip. Is it really pricey? Is it like airport kind of prices or?
Yeah. Well, perhaps not. Perhaps there are some competition going on in the Nordmarka, but they tend to be pricey.
Yeah. I mean, there's like huts everywhere.
Because after having done 1K on skis, there are nothing better than a waffle and some cocoa.
Not really.
You are willing to pay for that.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. It is a captive audience.
And if you have kids, man.
Oh, that bill's going to be nasty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Well, that's a good argument for not having kids. Another one.
For more arguments, tune in to Small Differences next week.
A tip of the week for why it's,
How can you convince your partner to not have kids?
I'm trying to think what else was kind of interesting about this. Yeah, again, it's one of these things where I can get on, like, public transport. This is such a like such an Oslo thing to do, is get on public transport carrying skis.
Yeah.
and
how does that work?
Surprisingly well. I wouldn't maybe want to do it at rush hour, but this was a Saturday.
I think the key thing is to have your skis be vertical.
Yes. Do people not do that? Are there people out there who are just like... I don't know. You know those like kind of classic comedy things where someone's got skis on their shoulder and or like a ladder and they turn around and, you know, that whole thing. I've never seen that. People seem the people of Oslo who are not supremely gifted with spatial awareness and like of other people around them are actually reasonably good at carrying skis on public transport.
Yes, if you give skis to a Norwegian and the Norwegian will behave better, be more coordinated.
Maybe, okay, this is a good mandate for that everyone should actually like have to carry skis at all times. Just to encourage a little bit of spatial awareness. I like it. Got really cold afterwards. That's the thing about everyone who drives to go cross-country skiing. They get back into a warm car. Everyone else stands at a cold bus stop for 15 minutes, getting cold and tired and wishing that they'd brought another layer.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to fix that. I guess carry a rucksack with more clothes in it. So, like, hot ski hiking tips. Like, what is the difference between ski hiking and, like, going on some prepared trail somewhere near a city? What's all that cultural stuff around?
For me, it's mainly about the break you take after a bit too long.
You get really tired and hot?
Yeah, and then your parents say, oh, it's a little further, but just wait. When we are arriving, then you will get the quick lunch and the hot cocoa and the orange.
Oh, this is an Easter ski trip.
Not necessarily, but Easter would be a pretty usual time for doing that kind of thing.
So to kind of prize open the subconscious / repressed set of memories from childhood, what I'm reading into this is that you kind of didn't really like it and it was a bit difficult and you're kind of relieved as an adult that you don't really have to do that anymore if you don't want to.
But I don't think those feelings are allowed.
You're allowed to not like the outdoors. The king said so.
I like the outdoors. I'm spending much time outdoors. Well, the main thing about me and skiing is that I'm not bothered with all the preparation.
You should get a pair of butterless skis.
It's not about even that.
What does it take?
But as you said, living on the West Coast, you actually have to plan and drive somewhere, and when there are weather for skiing, everyone is going skiing.
Mm.
So then you have the crowds, and that I can't be bothered.
Are there really so few places to go that they're like busy? The West Coast is huge.
Yeah.
Really?
Sort of.
Huh.
At least for the prepared tracks and so on.
But like, couldn't you just sort of like drive to some random point in the forest and get on a trail?
Yeah, but find a random point in the forest which is apt for skiing.
Close your eyes.
And suddenly
get the
you
map,
are
put your finger
fell
out.
Fell down in a river or something.
I guess that's how you know you're like a real rugged Norwegian or whatever, is you just like don't care. You're just like, fine, whatever, we'll ski through the stream.
Yeah. We read a pretty long feature article about some people who did that.
Okay.
And had to be saved.
Oh, the avalanche piece.
Yeah.
That was so good. Too long, but good nonetheless.
I'm not agreeing, but
well, you admitted that even you, like, you were at points like, okay, this is going on a bit.
Yeah, that was for me to just dry all my tears.
I wish there was a translation available of this, because it's great. It was good journalism. Yeah. It was really good journalism. It was how to sum up. You sum up.
Well, a German family went out skiing in Norway. I think they were probably, they seemed very experienced.
Yeah, that
really
was my impression.
I guess they got unlucky.
Yeah, the weather turned.
Yeah, and they were took by an avalanche. And I think everyone but the daughter managed to sort of get out of it. But she went under. Was it like 4 feet?
Maybe like a couple of meters, maybe. Yeah. Like it was It was enough to not get out.
They managed to contact someone, I think, and sort of get the movement for help going on. But it was pretty bad weather, so it was pretty difficult for the
rescue services
to come.
Yeah. Who were mostly volunteers, as far as I could tell.
Yeah, they are. Actually, they pay a lot to be able to do this.
Yeah, they're right. Yeah. They were spending their own money to, like...
Yeah. Mainly for dog training and so on. And equipment.
Mm. That was kind of... I was really, I don't know, humbled, I guess, by the extent to which these were not just people doing it on their own time as volunteers, but also, like, paying for, you know, their own vehicles and training and equipment and stuff.
Yeah.
Norway.
Yeah, there are so many. Some people are sort of volunteers in the Red Cross. So they are almost all... So they are kind of on duty all the time, so they can get a message on the phone to muster and go out to find someone who's lost in the woods or in the mountains or whatever.
Yep.
It is a nice thing that we have that when we also have the nature and the habit to seek into
people who
it.
Just keep wandering into the wilderness and needing to be saved.
Yeah.
I wonder whether it's mostly foreigners who need that, though. Cause like
it's a bit of both, I guess.
Well, I'm sure like you get Norwegians who need to be rescued once in a while, but like they're kind of fjellvett. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that stuff seems like drilled in pretty hard.
Yeah, but also that if you have grown up with this, you are used to like the outsides, because. Yeah, perhaps you would endure a bit longer also.
Well, because you're hardy or...
Yeah, or just you know, experienced.
Like, you know, like, what stuff not to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or not to fret or...
Yeah.
And I guess when foreigners come, they are usually going on, like... Almost like the tourist routes,
right?
And so
well, they're doing like Preikestolen and things like that, right? Like, plug for the Tom Cruise movie or whatever. I don't know.
From the trailer, he has some trouble.
Yeah, I didn't see it yet. I know it was like premiered at the Super Bowl or whatever, but I didn't.
Yeah, because he's climbing like down the Preikestol or something. Like
okay.
He took the hard route.
Right.
Of course.
Of course. Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Oh.
But yeah.
Have we done anything to dispel the myth that all Norwegians are supremely suited to the outdoors? Because I feel like we've just reinforced that.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that that's perhaps the case, that we are.
How would you be? You're a Boy Scout though, right? So like,
you're
supposed to know your shit.
I'm supposed to. I can make a fire.
Yeah? From nothing?
From nothing, just...
Next episode.
Not from nothing, but from something.
What are you allowed in order to make a fire to... Like, do you have to have stuff with you?
No.
Oh, really. This is good. All right. Say more.
But there are... So you can't make up a fire between, I guess... I think it's April 25th to the 1st of September or something.
You're not allowed to set a fire, like, in nature.
I think you probably could, like, in the, in the wilderness. What we in Norwegian would call utmark.
Yeah. The backcountry, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have some controlled conditions, and there are local regulations and so on. But yeah, like in the fall and winter months, you can make a fire from anything.
Yeah. I just remember there was a point last summer where we were going to have a barbecue outside. We were like on a cycle ride, and we had like stuff with to barbecue. And where we were was just like, this is not a good place to barbecue. Like one stray spark, and we're going to have destroyed like the whole of Nesselden or something like that. Let's not do this. So yeah. How do you make a fire out of nothing though? Like, this is like one of the things that I'm more aware of the more time I spend in the outdoors in Norway, which is a big cold country, and like, you know, lots of stuff can happen. There's lots of animals and things like that. Is like how ill-equipped I am. Even like, yeah, I was a girl guide. They didn't teach me how to survive in the wilderness.
So how do you make a fire?
Well, I mean, you can like rub sticks together and shit, but like,
well,
there's more efficient ways of doing that and less efficient ways of doing that.
Probably start with bringing matches.
You've seen, right, that video, right, where the guy basically like builds a hut in the forest from scratch. Don't and then he makes a hut and a chimney and
technology. The YouTube channel. Oh. I spent so many hours on that channel.
To what end? Are you a closet survivalist? Is this like some part of you that is just going, one day I really might need to know how to do this?
No, I'm a closet engineer.
I don't think you're that closeted.
And I think you're waiting outed. For him to make computers.
Well, it's the same guy. He's like progressed from the mud hut and the chimney through to building like a basic transistor.
He's making
or
metal now, so
you're kidding.
Getting there.
Seriously.
Yeah.
How?
I guess you have to see it.
I do. Link. I need links.
So he takes like this mud from the river, and that contains some metal, I guess, and he burns it, and
and then he gets some kind of metal oxide out.
Yeah.
And then what does he do? Does he like heat it over the fire and melt it? And
yeah, he's made this oven, right?
Yeah. How much mud do you have to get through before you've got enough metal to work?
Seems like a month, but
seems like you would need a lot of mud. Wow. Okay. So yeah, all right. So first he's going to have to like make tools, and then he's going to have to use the tools to make other things, and then
yes. And at some point he can make transistors.
Yeah.
And then you have it going.
And he can break his tools with his tools. Wow. Cool. Okay. But like on a more basic level, I genuinely started thinking about this. It's like, right, okay, well, what if I wanted to ski out in the middle of nowhere? Like, I'm very ill-equipped to do this. Should I have a rifle? I can't fire a rifle. I don't really want to have to kill anything.
Well, do you need a rifle?
Not really, but like, you know, if you start going out like longer tours, then like, you know, they're kind
of... Can you encounter a moose? Or some
if I encounter a moose, I'm just going to let it do what it wants from a safe distance. They're big things. You see these videos of like moose falling off like train bridges and stuff. like world's klutziest moose. We need to find a link for that because that is
depressed, perhaps.
What? Or depressed? But it gets up. It gets up and like carries on
why
after.
Why do we fall?
Yeah.
I should practice my what's the this famous British actor. What's his name again?
We have more than one.
Do you really?
They're not all Benedict Cumberbatch.
The other one.
Is that even his name? I've like read so many twisted versions of his name
like
now.
Like Alfred in Batman.
Michael Caine.
Michael Caine.
Okay.
Why do we fall? Why do we fall?
Now I'm getting the reference. Yeah. I knew I was like halfway there. I was right. Okay, yes. Thank you. What was your point?
Because he has an accent, I guess, or particular way of speaking, and I wanted to parody that, but I don't remember.
Okay, I can't do him doing Alfred. The only Michael Caine accent that anyone in the UK can basically do is like the Italian job.
But isn't there just the one?
Loosely, like he's from the kind of Sean Connery school of like I'm just going to make this work, okay? but yeah, what was your point with Michael Caine?
It was just the reference.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess we have to take a hard left turn because I have to get my topic into this episode.
Do it.
I said it was a huge week.
Well?
You don't want to speculate?
Well, I can speculate about lots of things. Like, the most exciting thing, well, it's a huge week because, like, we've got our podcast back online. Yeah. But that's not why. I'm hoping that what you're going to say is that you've built a whole new platform.
Well, almost.
Almost?
But that's not huge for me.
That's just, like, yeah, oh yeah, I just knocked out this kind of podcasting platform, whatever. That's just another day, like, Hosknitz. What's the huge week?
Well, I have some breaking news, actually. your face of anticipation was sort of... It threw me out.
Oh, in a good way? Well, I'm like...
Now I'm starting... Now I feel the pressure.
Hey, it's your topic.
I thought the British way was to be... post. Yeah.
Has anything I've ever done led you to believe that I am, like, classically British?
Is this the reason you had to move?
I don't want to talk about it. What's the topic?
I sort of want you to guess.
Dude, there's like a million things in the universe.
Because I just have this one chance to do this.
Oh. And you want to get it right.
Yeah.
But now the pressure is like up to 11.
Get it right.
There are too many things in the world for me to possibly guess.
Yeah, okay. So, like in a half a year, we don't need Skype anymore to do the recording.
Because?
I will be living here.
You're kidding?
No.
You're moving?
Yeah.
That's huge.
That's huge.
Wow. Congratulations.
Sure. It's a bit of a secret yet. Okay. So your colleagues doesn't know it yet.
You know that we, like, publish this podcast, right?
Yeah, but when that happens, they will know.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Yeah. And can I ask what precipitated this? I will never move to the...
Have I said that?
Yeah. Well, not in so many words, but you're kind of on the record as being like, everyone moves to Oslo, Jesus Christ.
Well, I have been feeling that we have sort of had the lack of content in this podcast, like proper. So I guess, well, let's stir it up then. Let's move. Let's me have a foreign experience.
Oh, boy.
Because now I have to learn all the things about the east of Norway.
Yeah.
As a Westerner.
Oh, boy. That's like a... That's a fairly heavy second act. Like, superficially, from the outside, yeah, Norway, like, same difference, but... Oh, same differences, we can change the podcast. That is a big deal. Big B, big D.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Was it surprising?
Yeah. Okay. I have questions. I don't know where to start.
Yeah. I guess I guess I have to somewhat explain why.
It would be good. It's optional.
It's not hard, but it's perhaps not satisfying. Perhaps it is. Well, I guess it is, as always, it is complex. It's many variables. Okay. You cannot pin it to one.
Okay.
One huge variable is we are so sick and tired of constantly living in rain.
Oh, it's happened.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It has worn me down.
You did say a while ago that it was a little bit. Well, the good news for you is that, like, it's less rainy here.
That's kind of the idea.
Yeah. Wow.
Let's cross the fingers. But, okay. Yeah.
Other things?
Not really.
Okay, just the rain. Had it done. Too much wet.
Yeah, but of course there's a reason why we can just be inside. Why does it matter? Because we have a lifestyle where we have horses and dogs and spend a lot of time outside, so it is a deal. But yeah, so, and I guess the horses are another part of the story, because having horses on the west side of Norway is more expensive and generally more of a hassle.
Why's that?
Many reasons, but mainly because all the horse food comes from the eastern part of Norway, so it has to be driven over the mountains and so on. So then you have the transport costs.
Huh.
And also the general facilitations are not that good compared.
Huh.
And also you have so much more of a horse milieu. Many stables and riding.
That's a whole
other
episode titled Horse Milieu. Yeah. No, I get it. Like, there's more of a, like, because there's more people here, there's more of that whole thing.
So that's a part of it.
Is land not way cheaper there, though? Land, is the land not way cheaper? Like, you can have, like, presumably, like, a huge kind of paddock and stables and stuff there without, like, it costing an arm and leg, whereas, can you say that for here?
Yeah. It's much cheaper here.
Really?
Yeah, it is.
Huh. That makes no sense to me. As someone coming from the UK, where anywhere within, like, loose commuting distance of London is just astronomically expensive. Like, property here in Oslo is more expensive than Bergen.
Of course it is, but don't have to travel that far outside of Oslo to have it not that expensive again. But also the terrain, the general fields and so on are much more apt for those kinds of... Because the West Coast, it's very hilly and stony and muddy. So much mud.
Because of the rain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you prepared for it to be cold here? Are your horses prepared for it to be cold here?
Yeah, that's a factor. The horses are, but because they have coats and so on, but...
Do they get, like, hairier in winter and then shed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I guess it's colder, but it's another type of coldness.
It's a dry cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can dress for that, but when we have rain and it being cold at the same time, it's harder.
Mm.
So I'm a bit of a climate refugee, which is perhaps not a cool thing to say, because they are actual
climate refugees. Yeah, it's not like Bergen has actually been subsumed by, like, rising sea levels. I mean, it's probably only a matter of time, but not yet. You're right, that is huge.
It is huge.
Are you excited?
Yeah. I guess there's a bit of anticipation on how will this be and so on.
Yeah.
But it's also, I lived in Bergen for quite a long time now, so I'm ready for change.
Yeah, I get that.
So, yeah.
Do you know where you're going to live?
In somewhat.
Okay.
Not exactly.
Okay. Do you want to get into the kind of the hows and whys of that, or another time?
Another time, I guess. It's both, because we are running a bit long.
Yeah,
because
we have to go to work. Yeah,
and we can delve into this, I guess, next time. Let it sink in.
All right.
You heard it first on...
Yeah, breaking news. Big deal. Cool. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
It'll be nice to have you here.
And you have to keep quiet for...
I can switch them, that's fine.
At least a week.
Okay. I can sit with a secret, I'm good with that.
Are you the type that can sit with a secret?
Oh yeah. Endlessly. If need be. Yeah.
It doesn't sound very convincing. Because you have those who just can't sit on a secret for a long time.
That's not me. I can do secrets, I can do poker face. I can do plausible deniability.
Because you spent time in the military, trained.
What?
No, I don't know. Is this something you learn on the psychology?
Yeah, that's totally what they do. Okay, the first week is reading people's minds. The second week on your undergraduate psychology course is like how to make anyone crack. No. Oh, sorry. Yeah, the third week is Freud. The fourth. No, like it's a thing that you learn about yourself, I guess, that you can either do this or not do this. I guess there's a group of people in there who think they can and are actually terrible at it.
Yeah.
I like to think I'm not in that group.
Yeah, so I guess we have to break with the format, perhaps.
Yeah, I guess.
The picks of the week and so on.
So because? I guess today, because we're out of time.
Aslan would be my pick.
Well, like we can't, I was going to say, we can't top any, like any kind of trivial word or cultural thing. Cannot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now we've peaked, that's it.
Well, we can just move again.
Yeah. I'll move to Tromsø. Yeah, something.
Yeah, so I guess in the fourth night we will return with yet another new episode of Small Differences.
Yeah, from a safe distance.
Yeah.
Safe distances. Yeah, new title. Just going to keep inventing.
Yeah, but now that I'm making a podcast at work, I guess we can have many other podcasts. Like Same Differences.
Yeah. Small Dorks.
Ski Talk.
Yeah, that's just people going. All right.
Yeah.
Need to go to work?
Need to go. Ha det bra. Takk for at du hørte på.
Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.